All right, so today we're going to finish talking about GLSL, and hopefully this is most of what you'll need to do the homework for. If you haven't already downloaded homework 4, please do so. Make sure that it runs on your machine or the machine that you want to use. And remember, update your OpenGL drivers. Like, if anything's wrong, the very first thing you should do is update your drivers and then come talk to me. Also, the project blogs are looking pretty good. So just keep updating them. I recommend like once a week or so. I think that's sufficient, even more often if you want to. The other thing with the student presentations, I think the two biggest tips I have based on the presentations we've seen so far is less is more. I know I send you quite a bit of resources, but pick what you think is most important and most relevant for this class and make sure you can fit it into 20 minutes. I'd rather have you cover less material and higher quality than try to rush through a lot of material. And then the other thing is try not to look at the projector. And this is a hard one. Like, I certainly won't, during lecture, I certainly look over here once in a while, right? And that's okay. But I want you to avoid presenting like this, right? Because this is not as effective as looking at your audience and talking to them, right? But the student presentations, I think, are going pretty well. So good job so far. Okay, so let's finish up GLSL stuff. So where we left off on Monday was we said that samplers are a special type of uniform for accessing textures, and most commonly textures are 2D data that may have images, but it may just be anything. It could just be a height field, it could be temperature, you could put anything that you want in there. And I said that we can access these with the texture 2D function. We can give it a 2D texture coordinate that's usually normalized, meaning it's in the range 0 to 1 floating point range. And then here's an example of a texture, and we use a very similar texture in your homework assignment for the globe rendering with the fragment shader. And in this case, you'll see the normalized texture coordinates 0, 0 to 1, 1. Now, the aspect ratio here, this is twice as wide as it is tall. So just because the normalized coordinates go from 0, 0 to 1, 1, doesn't mean that it's the actual same width and height. Right? Is that clear? Okay. So I want to show you a little bit more about the built-in GLSL functions, and I want to give you a number of tricks for writing really concise code in GLSL. And we'll focus more on this than we did when we looked at CUDA-C, although I think you'll see some similarities. And I want you to be able to write concise code, not just because it will be faster in many cases, but because it will be more readable. A lot of shaders, you might only have to write 40 lines of code to do a shader. But it might take one person 40 lines, and it might take an inexperienced person 200 lines. So I would rather you be the person that can do it in 40 lines. And also in terms of maintainability, as long as you don't obscure what the shader is doing, really, again, less is more. If you use less code, I think it's better overall. So there's a number of trigonometric functions, just like you see in the C library, that's also in GLSL, including inverse trig. Inverse trig is not quick. Last time I tested it, although it's been almost 2 years since I've tested it, but it is very, very slow. Radians, not degrees, radians. That's what the trig functions take. It's the same thing in C. It's pretty much that across the board. I recommend that you just use radians everywhere in your code. And that goes against some of the sample code that I did not write that's in homework 4 that uses both radians and degrees, and you should not do that. I've just always used radians, and you'll never run into any problems. One thing I want to point out here with these trig functions is that not only can they work on scalar values, what's the sine of this angle, but I can pass in a vector. Like, for example, the very last line, I give it a vec 3. That's 3 angles. Do the sine on all 3 of those angles. So just like we said last week, or on Monday as well, vectors and matrices are first-class citizens in GLSL. Okay, then there's a number of math functions, right, that you should be familiar with, again, from the C library. I want to point out here inverse square root, which is good for normalizing. We do this a lot in graphics. It's very fast. And they make it fast, right, because when they make the GPU, they go, hey, what's common for graphics? Let's make the common case fast. And remember, I handed out on Monday that list of the OpenGL and GLSL reference stuff, and it has a list of all the math functions. And I use that thing all the time. I have like this crinkled, ripped-up copy next to my desk or on my desk at work, and that's my go-to place when I'm using GLSL. Okay, so, you know, we can do things like take the absolute value of a number. We can get the sine, and the sine is, the sine function returns a floating point value that's negative 1 or 1 if it's negative or positive, or the sine of 0 is 0. And as we'll see, sine is quite useful. We can get the min and max of values. That's good. When you're doing lighting component, when you're doing lighting, like diffuse lighting, right, the max of 0 and n dot L. And then clamping is also very useful. And, you know, clamps are, if it's not clear what it does here, clamps a value to the range that you give it. So here, clamp 0, 1 is basically x will equal, if x is between 0 and 1, it's x. If it's less than 0, then it's 0. If it's greater than 1, then it's 1. So let's do a couple exercises here. Say I gave you this code, right? This thing does the max of x and minimum, and then the min of that with maximum. What if I wanted you to rewrite that with one function call? Based on what I showed you in the previous slide, what would we do? Or in words, tell me what this does. The middle one. So tell me, if x is greater than maximum, what does this thing return?
Maximum.
Okay, if x is less than minimum, what does it return? So it's clamp, right? Does everyone agree that this is a clamp function, that we've implemented clamp with min and max? Okay, so what about this? What if I wanted you to, and there will be one stipulation here. What did you say?
Scale.
So you want to? So how would it, if you were to write this without this if statement, you'd scale it with clamp. Okay. So there's going to be one stipulation to at least my answer. Of course, there could be other valid answers. But how would you guys rewrite this without this statement? Yep.
Sine times two.
Yes. Okay. Now tell me the stipulation on why that's not exactly the same. Right, so, and that, this was my mistake from last spring. No one, I didn't catch it, no one in the class caught it. But yes, so the only difference here is that sine returns, and that f would be 0 instead of negative 2 in this if statement. A lot of times, though, when I'm removing if statements and using things like sine to not have the if statement, I don't care about those cases. So it's still a very useful technique. And there's like, we could probably have like an entire lecture, maybe half a lecture on like, how do you remove if statements with standard library functions? And it used to be a big deal because the if statements would be, well, you had limited support for if statements in GLSL. And now, as we know, the if statements, the performance isn't bad unless they diverge a lot within screen space, right? You guys remember we talked about that. We looked at the shadow example where a lot of a shadow from a tree and the screen space coherence was really poor, because some pixels were in shadow and some weren't. You know, that's like an example where you really don't want that if statement because you're going to be doing both sides of it. So use sine here. Okay, here's another one. So let's rewrite this without the if statement. And this, as several of these examples are, these are real code snippets from shaders that I wrote, you know, like over a year ago at this point. But they're still real code. I didn't make these up. Min? Tell me more. So you'd return vec3, 0, 0, and then you say min root 1, root 2, right? That's all this code is doing. And this was for array ellipsoid intersection test, if I recall. Okay, so here's another example, and this is totally my hacked up debugging code somewhere, where I'm like, oh, if something's true, I'm going to output white, and if not, I'm going to output... I'm going to do red or green depending on what if something's true or not. With no built-in functions, maybe just some type conversion hint, how would you rewrite this with this if statement in one line of code? Sean?
Could you do vec3 and then cast b to an int for the first one, for the first component, and then cast b to an int for the second one? Or
So these are opposite. These are floats, right? Not ints.
Oh, but B is a.
B is boolean, but there, but B will be implicitly converted to a float. So what do you think about vec3 B comma not B comma zero? I get that right? Is that clear? Or do you guys want me to write it on the board? Okay. Okay, so also in GLSL, there's a number of really useful geometric functions. Like if I want to know the length of a vector, if I want to know the distance between two points, dot products, cross products, normalize. Reflect, really important, right? You know, when you look at lighting computations and you need to reflect a vector around the normal. And then there's also refract as well for doing refraction. And then just so the reflect input is really clear, you're taking a vector L and you're reflecting it around R. And depending on if L is pointing towards the surface or away from it, you may need to originally negate it. So if it's wrong, if your code is wrong, flip it. Okay. So how would you rewrite this here? Hopefully this is an easy one. So here's two vectors. I subtract them and find the length. How would you rewrite that in one line of code based on this? Distance. That's too easy. I'm going to delete this slide for next year. Don't you guys think that is very much low-hanging fruit? Fix my code. Is nothing wrong with this code? Does it change it? No, it does not change it. And I explicitly did not tell that to you guys.
What if the N is zero?
What does it do? I don't know. It doesn't crash, I know that much. So he's asking, what if the length of N is zero? You know, what does normalize do? Or, you know, I can't say that I know what it does, or I can't say that I know that the spec defines what it does, but I am positive that the spec will define that nothing, that you're, that nothing crashes, but I don't know what the results will be. You'll just get zero if it's a zero length, because it just won't do the divide by zero, and just look at zero. But so look, normalize and all these functions, they're immutable in that they don't change the input; they return new output. So you'll definitely see bugs like this. I don't know that I've seen someone do this in GLSL, but I've definitely seen it in some JavaScript code that I wrote where a matrix or a vector had a normalize function someone called normalize and didn't realize that that was immutable, meaning that it didn't change the object itself. Okay, so here's some cool stuff that we can do with comparing vectors. Okay, so P and Q here are two vec3s, and I can compare, I can see if component-wise, if they're equal, and I can get a new vec3 of Boolean values, that's the equal function. I can also know if component-wise, if the components are less than or greater than each other, which is the less than and greater than functions there. And then I can also say, oh, look at that, there's a typo. And these slides are, so here we go. These vec3s here should just be Booleans. Nope. These any and all functions, any of B returns true if any of those things are, if any of the quantities are true. So B right there has false, true, false. So we're saying if any of them are true, it's true. And then all says all of them have to be true. Right? So these are useful for doing comparisons of multiple components in a very little amount of code. So someone new to GLSL might write this function. I think you guys could write it in one line of code. So in words, what does this function do? What does it do? Any less than. That's what, so. I don't know what the chalk is. Oh, that's okay. Can you guys see down here? So do you guys all agree that we do less than, P is less than Q, and then we get a Boolean vec3, then we say if any of those values were true, then the function should return true. Does everyone agree with that? That's basically what this if-else block does. Okay, so what didn't we cover? Well, there's a lot of GLSL stuff that we didn't cover, but some of the most important stuff is there are arrays in GLSL, there's structures as well. You can make functions, and it's like the same. It's basically the same as what you'll see in like C, where you can have you can make functions. They can be void. They can return values. You can have in parameters. You can also have out parameters, which you can't necessarily have in C, but you can have pointers. So it's it's similar enough. There's some support for const, although sometimes the compiler would drive me crazy. There is flow control with while and for, right? And there's also partial derivative functions in screen space. Here's dfdx, dfdy, and fwith. And these, they're used, as Adam may talk about today, they're used for anti-aliasing. I'm not sure, and I won't hold it against him if he doesn't talk about it. but they're used for anti-aliasing. They're also used, the screen space derivatives internally are used for selecting MIP layers when you're MIP mapping. But loosely speaking, screen space partial derivatives is all about how quickly does a value change for adjacent fragments on the screen. So say you think about two fragments or two pixels right next to each other, and behind them is texture coordinates that were used maybe to map the texture to that surface. And you might take the screen space partial derivative in the x or y direction and say, how fast is that texture coordinate changing? And then it's incredibly useful. I mean, I use it probably more than I want to rely on it, because a while ago the support for these was really bad, but more recently I think it's better. Okay, so I know I gave you guys printouts for the quick reference card. The man pages are awesome, and they just keep getting better. These are the OpenGL. This is the GLSL man pages, right? So let's go pick a function. Tell me a function you guys are interested in. What'd you say? The okay. So here, it gives you the prototype, it gives you the parameters, gives you a description. Here's one of the best things about this, is it tells you what version of GLSL it's in. And I know maybe this doesn't seem like a big deal now because we're all kind of targeting the same version for our homework assignments and our projects. But, wait until you're in industry and you're using a particular version and you can't go higher because your customers can't run that card or anything like that. So this is really, really useful. So I totally, I'm a huge fan of the man pages. I think you guys should be using them. And then, like I said, if you're doing any shader authoring within Visual Studio, the end shader plugin is really nice to get syntax highlighting. So tell me, what questions do you guys have about GLSL from a language point of view? We're going to talk more about we're going to pick selected topics from the OpenGL API, which we kind of use to invoke the shaders, and we'll do that next week. And we're also going to do selected rendering topics as well, which is, actual applications for using the shaders, not just the shading language itself. But at this point, I feel that we've covered the shader programming model pretty well as the language pretty well. And I think that given your CUDA background from the first half of the semester, you guys should be pretty well equipped with the fundamentals. But tell me if there's any questions or concerns for GLSL. All right, very good. So I am ahead of schedule for once for the student presentations, which maybe gives you guys a little more breathing room. So artificial intelligence / neural networks. And how do I say your name? Tao? T-A? Tao? Okay, good, come on up. And again, I'm logged into the main PC if you guys want to use it.